Now we have wage differentials. Interpersonal wage differentials are due to variations in personal characteristics. What do you mean by wage differential? The package I am drawing from the company is different from the package you are drawing from the company. We both are having different skills, different levels of working, different departments we may be working. So our interpersonal wage differential are due to the variation in the personal characteristics. The same person, there's a person X working in a company and there's a person Y working in the same company. Both of them are having the same qualification, maybe at the same level. But after some time you find that A has gone ahead because his personal characteristics are supportive. B is left behind. And B may be wondering, why is it that I'm not getting promoted, etc. Okay. So the personal characteristics is one of the factors in which the wage differential is focusing. Inter-firm wage differentials are due to varying abilities of firms to pay wages. Inter-firm means between two companies. In the same industry, for example, company A pays X amount of money to their employees at one level. In the same level in the other company B, they may not be paying that much, they may be paying less because that company has got the ability to pay only that much due to whatever reasons. Inter-firm wage differential. Inter-occupational wage differential are due to the varying job requirements and demands. So one type of job gets paid more, another type of job gets paid not so more. People who are into marketing, people who are doing traveling, they get certain incentives extra. People who are working in very tough conditions in operations in the factory, they get paid more. People who are working, for example, in the offshore, drilling and all that, you know, in oil companies, they get paid more because that occupation demands certain amount of, it's got some risk, and so it demands a certain amount of motivation to take the risk. So people have to go to the platform, at the drilling platform, stay there for months together. It's a very tough conditions. For that, the occupational wages are different from their counterparts who are working in the land in the same company, in the office. Inter-area wage differentials are due to varying demand, supply factors, living costs, etc. So within the same area or between two areas, which could be two cities or two towns, the differential will be different. So in one place, the cost of living is high, so we may be paying more. The same job in the other city, which is a lower city, tier one city, we may be paying less because of the demand supply factors, the living cost, etc. Right? Now these are some of the motivational factors for people when they take up a job and they go from one company to another. They must know how it is impacting them. Right? Wage differentials in economy functions. Wage differentials perform important economic functions like labor productivity, relocation of labor, efficiency, etc. Because there is a differential wage, people are into competitive way of working. So everybody wants to go ahead. And this going ahead is making labor productivity better. Relocation of labor, that means they are leaving one company, going to the other company. There is a movement and the efficiency also increases. They provide an incentive for better allocation of human resources, labor mobility among different regions, as I already told you. And they play a significant role in the development of national wage policy. So there's a thing called national wage policy, which I'm not discussing in length right now because it's about, there's a separate subject in which you'll be learning it. So the national wage policy decides what should be the wage policy for different people at different levels. So there are something called minimum wages, you know, there are different types of things which I'm not taking right now. And students who are taking up HR, for them, they have a separate subject called wages and salary administration where they'll be learning this. Okay. Now we talk about fringe benefits. These are the extra benefits that is provided to the employees in addition to compensation paid in the terms of salary. This is that extra icing on the cake, as you call it. So that benefits is what actually draws you to a company A and tells you not to go to company B. So fringe benefits are something which are very, very attractive for certain people. So they love to be in that company. There's one large company in Mumbai, which does not pay very well in terms of salary. But the fringe benefits like quarters, medical facilities, their products being available at a very subsidized prices to the employees, all that is very high. And I know people who have working in the company, they live there, they retire with the same company, although their pay packages are not very high. Their children are put in the best of the school in the with the company has, and this is something really amazing. Now that fringe benefits is something that adds to your personal value of your family itself. And that is something which some employees look forward to. It covers bonus, it's one part of it, social security measures, retirement benefits, housing, educational facilities, etc. There's one more term called employee welfare that is closely connected to fringe benefits, wherein we look at the welfare of the person as a human being, because a happy human at home comes back to the office and he's able to work in a good way. Okay? So some benefits cover employees and their family members also, and fringe benefits add to the competitiveness of the organization, right? Now, the need for extending fringe benefits. Why do we need to give fringe benefits? Employees demand benefits over pay hike to reduce burden due to increase in taxes. That's a tax part of it. Employees prefer benefits over pay hike as it improves morale and facilitates employee retention. Now, this is a soft skill part of it, where people feel good about themselves. They feel the company is caring for me, and they feel that because the company is caring for me, I would rather stay in the company. It's a caring culture. To provide security to the employees against contingencies, when things go wrong, suddenly something happens. So fringe benefits helps you to retain it. You need to have suddenly a huge expenditure comes. There's an illness in the family and the hospitalization. You have to spend a lot amount of money. And the company has a medical policy which says we'll give you any amount of money for that. So during the contingency, the company's fringe benefits acts like a beautiful rescue and a buffer. What's the objective of fringe benefits? It creates and improves industrial relations, boosts employee morale, motivate employees by identifying, satisfying unfulfilled needs. It provides qualitative work environment and appropriate work life. Qualitative is important. When people are engaged in the work, they give quality. It provides security to employees against social risks. Taking it further, protect health of employees and provide safety against accidents. Promote employee welfare and measures like recreational facilities. Create sense of belongingness among employees to retain them. Meet requirements of legislations relating to fringe benefits. Now, these are some of the things which are a little detailed given here. But the point to be noted in view of the discussion is all about motivation, application of motivation. The fringe benefits give you these type of motivation. That's what we are trying to say. The details, I'm not dwelling into it. It's anyway understood and covered in other places. Rewards. Organization has to balance financial and non-financial rewards and extrinsic and intrinsic rewards. Extrinsic is what I give you physically outside. Intrinsic is what you feel inside as a satisfaction. So they have to balance this. Rewards system to be effective should have favorable compensation level. No point in giving you some rewards with compensation being very low. I have to compensate you well so that your personal lifestyle is good. Then I reward you. It makes a difference. It should satisfy principle of internal equity and equity with job content. I should not reward you disproportionately. If you're working in a particular position, you've done a good job. So with that position, whatever is required, I can give a reward to that level. Otherwise, it is incongruous. Employee is satisfied if perceived salary is equal to actual salary. This we have already discussed in one of the motivation theories. Types of rewards. Rewards can be extrinsic or intrinsic. This is a repetition actually. Okay. Internal or external. External or internal. Financial or non-financial. Financial is about performance and membership based. Okay. Intrinsic rewards are satisfiers that employees get from the job itself, such as job accomplishment, team member, job enrichment, etc. I'm not explaining it. Extrinsic rewards are external to the job and come from management, such as fringe benefits, salary promotions, etc. Financial and non-financial rewards. Financial rewards include wages, salaries, allowances, incentive payments, bonus profits, profit sharing, etc. And non-financial includes canteen, conveyance, medical care, paid vacations, paid sick leave, etc. Right? Performance and membership based rewards. Performance based rewards include commissions, incentive pay, piece work, pay plans, group bonus, etc. Membership based rewards include DNS allowance based on cost of living, house rent allowance, city compensatory allowance, etc. Now, these are all the details of what companies could do. So each of the details is ultimately telling you that this is designed for the purpose of motivation. Okay. This should have actually been a part of the HR discussion, but it's here, so I'm just reading it out, right? Non-monetary rewards. Treats like picnics, festivals, bashes, free lunches, dinner for family, etc. Knickknacks like desk accessories, company watches, diaries, planners, etc. Awards like trophies, plaques, citations, certificates, letter of appreciation, etc. Office environment includes redecoration, pipe music, flexible hours, etc. Right? taking it further, it's been given much of details. Social acknowledgement like formal recognition, recognition at get-togethers, suggestions, etc. Tokens such as movie tickets, vacation trips, birthday presents, etc. On-the-job rewards such as increased responsibility, job rotation, training, etc. Advantages of non-monetary rewards: motivates employees to perform better, builds employees' self-esteem, makes employees more loyal to company, makes employees less resistant to change because it's non-monetary, he feels a sense of belonging, creates close bond between company and employee families. Non-monetary rewards have got this demerits or disadvantages. It demotivates employees if process is not properly transparent. If I'm going to give you a vacation, you're going for a vacation and you know things are not very clear, and after the vacation, you know, I'm putting some riders, I say, okay, this is the cost you have to bear, or something which is coming as a surprise, it demotivates people. So don't give something non-monetary which is not clear to the people. May result in hasty decision making, results in unhealthy competition, because what happens is I am rewarding somebody with a package to go to Bali or something, and the other person is not getting rewarded because he has not performed. Now because of this, what happens is there will be unhealthy competition between these two. There may be certain personal issues that come up, jealousy and stuff like that. Work intrudes into the home life of employees. This is what happens. Okay, because of the non-monetary rewards, people start taking work home and they start getting over involved. That may affect the home. Rewards do not work if monetary rewards are not adequate. Okay. Now we talk about stock option schemes, ESOPs, as some of you must be knowing it. Employee stock option schemes. It was introduced by the IT sector and the BPO sector some years back, and even other companies are not doing it. It allows employees to purchase the shares of the company at a fixed and reduced price. Employees feel motivated and a sense of belonging when they are allowed to buy at a concession price. It's like my company. I start feeling a sense of belonging, and also I start feeling I'm a part of the company. Stock options are viewed as performance-based incentive, and they are common in many countries. Merits, it links compensation packages to performance, enables company to retain efficient employees, encourages employees, inculcates a sense of ownership and responsibility in employees, and promotes team efforts. Limitations or demerits, it can be used only by profit-making companies. If the company shares are going up, then you seem to be having a good amount of market capitalization, or more, your net worth of your shares is pretty high. But if the company is not doing profit, it's low. Share prices do not reflect fundamentals. Falling share prices results in a loss to the employees. It has happened in many companies, IT companies, in the recent past. Unstable stock market causes inconvenience of encashing investment of employees. Okay, so you may be stuck up with some stock options with you, whose value is less than what you've invested some years back when you took up the options in the company. Okay. Now we talk about participative management. Now this is very interesting. What is meant by participative management? It means, as the name indicates, there was a time when the management was top down. So the top people were managing the people below, and the people from below had very less to contribute to the people at the top. Now participative management is a breakthrough which says it's more of a democratic way of managing, wherein the views of the top management, the views of the people at the bottom, both of them are exchanged. There's participation of give and take, and the best options and the best alternatives are taken as action steps. By and large, most companies are into participative management today. It increases scope of employees in decision making. Participation occurs at all levels of management. It incorporates willing acceptance of responsibility by employees because we feel a sense of belonging and involvement. Okay. It provides association of workers representatives. Right? Formal versus informal participative management. Now this is something very different. Important forms in which workers participate in management are collective bargaining, joint decision making, consultations, and information sharing. Now this is a formal system. Group of workers, they've got some demands, individually they can't do anything. So they get into collective bargaining through a union which they form, and they have a union leader. This is a formal way of participating management, wherein the workers participate with the management in giving them information about what they want, and they in turn give them information about what they can offer. A typical management labor scenario in any factory, any manufacturing unit. Formal systems like our works committees, joint management council, etc., which is having a formal structure. Informal system, like a supervisor consulting a worker before taking decisions. This informal system is what happens on a day-to-day basis, right? What's the objective of participant management? It improves productivity, allocates role to employees in the process, satisfy employee social and esteem needs, strengthen labor management cooperation, establish harmonious industrial relations, improve efficiency of company, and build a dynamic human resources. So by simply participating, making them feel good, there are a number of benefits that you, the objectives work in that direction. It's a source of motivation. That's the reason participation has been introduced, participative management. It promotes balanced interaction pattern, permits members to unfreeze attitudes, permits leaders to reinforce their position, enable subordinates to benefit from exchange relationship, and subjects individual to group pressures to implement decisions. Okay, how does the leaders get reinforcing the position? When leaders or managers are interacting with the subordinates and having a give and take, they start being looking at as people who are very benevolent, and they know their position of power starts increasing because people start cooperating with them and producing results. Okay, empowerment, a term which we use very often. Empowerment means I am giving you part of the power to you so that you can take an action using your authority and responsibility and risk. It reduces barriers between employees and management. People at all levels are involved in fulfilling company vision. Feeling of belongingness, creativity is encouraged, improves organization strengths, and employees learn self-leadership. Another form of motivation which is employed by companies, empowerment. Allowing people to take risk, take a chance and use their power and enable them to go ahead. It's through empowerment people develop skills to rise up in the ladder. If you don't empower people, if you play safe too much and you put a lot of fear element into people, no empowerment takes place. What are the conditions for effective empowerment? It provides information to all employees. There should be transparency. When information is required for you for doing a task, it should be given to you. There should be open source. It should create conducive organization culture which is helpful for each other. Employees should understand job specifications well. Management should delegate authority. It should encourage employees to take risks. Reward employees frequently. Employees should have power to make substantive decisions. These are some conditions that are required so that empowerment takes place. Basically, a conducive, trustworthy environment. Group interaction. Now, through group interaction, people are given motivation. So when groups come together, people feel a sense of belonging, and that itself creates a motivation other than working in isolation. So groups have two types of goals: task goal and maintaining the group itself. The group has got its own boundaries. It has got its own identity. The group has to function as a group. So every member of the group starts getting into fierce loyalty and possessiveness with each other and work like a team. Plus, they achieve the task goal. Participation in group may be voluntary, assigned or invited. I may do it voluntarily, or I may be asked to do it, or I may be invited to do it. Leader of a group is a must to coordinate and control members of the activities. As a matter of fact, whenever a group is formed, there already emerges a proxy leader, I call it, a proxy leader. If you take any group, automatically there comes a person who starts getting into the influencing of the thoughts and the actions of other members of the group, right? Group norms pertain to expected behavior of a member. Every group has got its own norms. And these norms are not voiced, but they are to be understood. All norms are not voiced, but it is understood. Every group will say these are the do's and the don'ts, and one is supposed to follow them to be a part of the group. Cohesiveness, coming together and sticking on together, is a degree of attraction group has for its members. It's a very, very modern way of ensuring that employees are highly motivated by staying them in groups. Now we talk about quality circle. What has quality to do with motivation, which we are discussing right now? Quality is a self-governing group of quality circle is defined as a self-governing group of workers with or without their supervisors who meet voluntarily to identify, analyze and solve problems of their work field. Now, if I am encouraging people to get into quality, it means I'm encouraging them to have a better life. Now, to make that thing happen, I need to have a culture which supports quality and enables people to discover quality and start involving in quality. So quality circle is not something in which, you know, you have 10 people coming together and teaching them quality or training them into quality. No, it doesn't happen that way. I must have a value for quality. That value for quality comes into me when I'm involved in my intrinsic rewards, when I feel satisfied with the organization, when I have a sense of belonging. I want to give out the best and I want to see if my customer gets the best. So I develop a value for quality. Such people in the company who have a value for quality, because they are inner driven, such people have to be brought together to create a QC, quality circle. And this quality circle becomes a huge source of motivation for that quality circle members themselves and also for the others. That's why we are discussing this in this application of motivation as a quality circle as a motivation application. QC is a form for improvement of quality and productivity, cost reduction, effective use of resources, problem solving, encourage creativity, satisfy psychological needs of employees. Some techniques used in QC is given. This is actually a little elaborate for this particular thing. So I'm just explaining it to you. Brainstorming. People are made to sit together and a certain theme has to be discussed. So everybody comes out with their own thoughts. Unfettered. Absolutely. So nobody has to feel afraid that my thoughts are not good or I don't know much, etc. Whatever comes to your mind, keep talking and everything is jotted down. There are different types of ways of registering it. And through the brainstorming, ideas keep flowing. And from the ideas, we eliminate the ones which are not in line with what we want and we come out with the ideas which we want. Free environment is created to stimulate creativity. Employees' ideas are viewed without criticism. Focus is to generate as many ideas as possible and all ideas are evaluated and discussed before taking final decisions. Cause and effect or fishbone diagram, also called as Ishikawa diagram. It's a form of quality circle. It's a tool which we use. So members are asked to find causes of for an identified problem. Okay, identified problem, traffic congestion in a metro city like Mumbai. What do you think are the causes? So each member will give different causes. So that is all mapped in a type of a fish bone. It looks like a fish with bone coming out from the backbone. You know, there's a central line, a horizontal line from where there are ribs coming out. So on that is chalked or jotted down all the various causes. Then each cause is further deliberated upon. Why do you think this is happening? So people start deliberating on that. So members are asked to identify one important effect of the cause of the problem. Charting out causes and effects resembles a fishbone diagram. It looks like that, right? This is a second technique which we use in QC. Sampling and charting method is very common. Members observe events and their consequences in the form of positive or negative results. They chart their observations in sequence or in some relationship. This generates a clear idea of the problem. So this again is telling you, in this method, people are involved and the motivation increases. Concepts of effective QCs. Persuasion by all people that there is more than one way to solve a problem. So you become multi-directional in your thinking. What is called as divergent thinking. Clarification and building on each other's ideas. Periodic summary of activities. Avoidance of heated arguments because nothing is personal, everything is group. Promotion of constructive disagreements. And avoidance of major vote and conflict. So nothing is personal, it becomes impersonal, it becomes group. Now we have what is called as quality of work life. Another way of motivating people, quality of work life. It refers to the favorableness or the unfavorableness of job environment for people. It's a degree to which members of an organization are able to satisfy important personal needs. So the organization is giving me a work life, a work lifestyle, which is conducive to my growth. I feel like coming back and because of this, I'm able to fulfill my personal needs. Working hours, for example. There are some companies which have working hours from 8 to only 4. So 4:30 people leave and they have time to take care of their personal needs. Okay, there are companies which are now reducing their 6-day week into a 4-day week or 3-day week and they are conserving a lot of resources. And 2 days you are having totally free to yourself. It's happening now. And those 3 or 4 days you are working in a week, you work for 12 hours. So you are reporting, say 8 in the morning, maybe you leave at 8 o'clock at night, people don't mind it. So rest of the days you are having time to do things for yourself. Improvement in QWL is any activity which takes place at every level of an organization which seeks greater organizational effectiveness. So let us not be under the mistaken notion that more work is going to give you more productivity. No. More number of hours put at the workplace. Sitting late is, if it is imperative to sit late for a work to be accomplished with involvement, do sit late. But not as something like a routine where people feel erroneously that sitting late is everything. And this is one thing which does not give you a quality of life. Okay. Conditions for QWL, adequate fair compensation should be given. Safe and healthy working conditions. Opportunity to develop human capacities. Opportunity for career growth. Social integration in workforce. Constitutionalism in work organization where things are going in a proper systematic manner. Democratically. Balance between working and non-working factors and relevance, social relevance of the work. Okay? That's it, friends. Thank you very much.